and former Kenosha Unified Schools Superintendent Joe Manji. Now here's today's Education Matters moderator.
And a very pleasant good morning and welcome to this edition of Education Matters here on WGTD HD. I'm your host today, Steve Brown. We have two segments today. In segment one, my interview with Dr. Brian Albrecht, president at Gateway Technical College. And in segment two, a rebroadcast of an interview I did with Louise Dubay, executive director of iCivics. And now segment one of today's program. I'm very pleased to once again have as my guest here on Education Matters, Dr. Brian Albrecht, who's president here at Gateway Technical College. Brian, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for inviting me.
Of course, always. And it's always nice for you to stop into the studio, which it happens to be right across the hall from your office.
Right across the hall. And I'm so proud of WGTD and all of the 8 Wisconsin Broadcaster Awards that you all received again this year. It is such an inspirational resource for our community. You keep us informed and you provide very thought-provoking interviews, of which I get to be one today.
Yes, you do. And I hope it will be thought-provoking
and
very conversational. First of all, one of the things I wanted to talk about at the outset is that you've announced your retirement. And just talk about that, if you will, in any capacity and any framework you want to talk.
I would be happy to. You know, it's one of those things that I could talk for the entire hour about because it has been so meaningful for me to have experienced Gateway in the unique ways that I have had a chance to do that as the president here at the college. But you're pretty familiar with my journey. I started out as a high school teacher, went directly to the Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction, spent 16 years supporting teachers and educators across the state, and had a chance at one time to visit every school district in the state of Wisconsin. So I know it from north, south, east, and west. And in fact, one of my stints at the Department of Public Instruction, I worked directly for now Governor Tony Evers, so I've had a chance to experience a lot of different aspects of public education. When I had the opportunity back in 2004 to consider Gateway Technical College as a vice president for advanced technology centers, the world was a lot different at that time. Of course, this building that we're in with the radio station was called BioCat at that time.
That's right.
So I came. I was honored to be invited to come in and check it out. And boy, was it the right decision, because I have learned so much and gained such a deep appreciation for what Gateway means to our community. So now that it's been, you know, close to 18 years later, 16 as a college president, it gives me a point of pride and reflection on the impact that we continue to make in our community. No small task. It certainly wasn't because Brian was the president. It was because we were able to build a community of support in order to advance the mission of the college. So I'm thrilled of what I've been able to accomplish, but it's time now to pass the baton, as they say, in a track meet and let the next person take it to even a greater height. That's an exciting part about any type of job, is that when you give everything to it, you want to hand it off and let someone else just run with it. So Gateway's in a really strong position to do that.
So being president for 16 years, as you know, the American Council on Education, they had a report out in 2017, and they said the average number of years for a college president at any level, it was 6.5 years. 6.5 is a lot, is one almost one-third less, or two-thirds less, rather. I'm sorry. I'll talk about my math skills some other time. But what is it? What was it? What has it been about being here at Gateway that has kept you as president, but just to make it so you can do all the things that you have done?
Well, you raise a really good point, and I know and have experienced many colleges and universities that have transitioned leadership, and that can be a challenge to sustain momentum and build community relations when you don't have strong leadership at the top. But what the difference for me is that every day is like day one. It's the same today. I get just as excited today as I did back in 2006 when our board appointed me the president, because I can just see the opportunities. I can feel the excitement in the students' experience. And Gateway is such a big, comprehensive college that nothing is the same, nor is it going to be the same tomorrow. So I can get excited about programs, about community partnerships, our industry relationships, our student success, and everything keeps me motivated. And I think that's what's so unique about this college.
Mm-hmm. You know, in a statement that you wrote entitled "A Letter to My Gateway Family on Life and Leadership," you said, as a teacher, you never really know the personal influence you have in the lives of others unless your paths cross again later in life. Before we talk more about that aspect, I know I've asked you this before, but who was it, or was there a teacher in the years that you were growing up, and you grew up in northern Wisconsin? Talk about that, and if there was one particular teacher who had a real influence on Brian.
I would be honored to, and it is no doubt it's Joe Shante. Joe was a brand new teacher at Fond du Lac High School when I started my first day in as a high school student. So it's always intimidating starting a new school, right? I left the junior high, went to the high school, and actually arrived a day early because I wanted to see where my classrooms were. And Joe was a brand new teacher doing the same thing, trying to find his classroom and getting organized. And we met in his room, and we have been friends ever since. He was just someone that I really looked up to because I had a similar passion. I wanted to be in that time industrial arts, today technology. A teacher. I admired him for that. He had a lot of energy and passion, which really inspired me around his commitment to care for what my success was. And he was involved in other aspects of the school, not just the academic preparation. He supported my interest in basketball and got me my first job, actually. So I really admire Joe. And still, this is a big thrill. I'm going to send him this link to the radio interview because I try to remind myself to thank him every time I see him.
Sure. And, you know, I can relate so much to that. I almost dropped out of high school as a junior in Florida, in Miami, at Southwest Miami Senior High School. And there were two teachers, Doris Ann Johnson and Jesse Wilson. Mrs. Johnson was my high school chorus teacher. Mr. Wilson was my American history and government teacher. And separately, without the other one knowing, they took upon themselves individually to work with me. I was ready to drop out to join the Air Force, and I didn't. So I can certainly relate to what you just said about, you know, a teacher, and I had many, many great teachers.
And Steve, I think that's what I tried to express in my letter to our team members here when I announced my retirement, and that so many people influence our lives throughout our careers and beyond, and we often don't even realize it or recognize it. And I think it's important for me now in this reflection time of my life to make sure that I acknowledge whether it's Joe or maybe Len Sterry up at UW-Stout who helped shape my professional experience, Dick Kitzman, who's passed away now, when I went to the Department of Public Instruction, nurtured me in helping me understand how we could be successful, and all the way through Gateway, all of our trustees, the Board of Trustees that I've had over the years, they continue to encourage and support. Of course, our leadership team, who I work with very closely, and everyone is in it for the same cause, right? We want to make sure that our service to our students and our community is something that's going to provide value to them.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned UW-Stout. The years that you were there, what was your focus? I know you were also involved in athletics there.
Yeah, I've always wanted to be a teacher. So I went to Stout to become a teacher. And that's what I did. That was my first job over at Cornell High School and then Kewaunee High School. Mm-hmm. But that sense of teaching has always kind of driven me. And I still would consider myself a teacher today, although I'm not in a classroom every day. I get to teach people about Gateway, its history, its purpose, its mission, its focus. And I get to do it on different levels of stages, right? So it could be a local community meeting. It might be the state legislature where we're advocating for further investments, or it might even be on the national level testifying to Congress. But it's really about helping people understand the valuable role that education can play in one's life, and that sometimes takes additional advocacy.
Mm-hmm. As you look back at your years here at Gateway, what is one thing that really sticks out in your mind, Brian, that you are most proud of?
Well, there are many. But if I had to pick one, it is the students and the success that they now receive in the community. So as I build partnerships in our community, work with nonprofits, work with our public sector, police, fire, 9 times out of 10, someone will stop me and say, I went to Gateway. And so that in itself gives me such a pride factor. I met so many students at graduation and then take pictures with their families, and then their dad or their mom will tell me that they went to Gateway and their brother went to Gateway. And it's a remarkable network within our community of Gateway graduates and alum. And to know that I maybe had a little bit to do with that, providing them a positive experience here, and now they're providing leadership support, and as we've learned through COVID, some of the most essential jobs in our community.
Mm-hmm. And as you say that, the role of the technical colleges here in Wisconsin, and my experiences have always been with the term a community college.
Sure.
I did my first 2 years at Miami-Dade Community College.
Excellent school,
Miami.
By the way.
But how has the whole technical college structure changed And what impact have you had with regards to that?
Yeah, I think if you went back historically, all the way back to 1911 when we were founded, the intended mission was really to help rebuild an economy in southeast Wisconsin that was moving toward an industrial base. So from a primarily agriculture base to an industrial base, that's why our community partners like S.C. Johnson or Modine, Snap-on Tools, they're all 100, 125 years old, and Gateway's 111 years old. So we kind of grew up together. Of course, it's different today. Mm-hmm. The skill sets are a lot different, and you've got different types of companies like Uline and Amazon and Foxconn, and you can go up and down the list of new corporate partners that we have in partnership with the legacy companies as well. But Gateway itself has always been in a position to be responsive and pivot to the different types of economic needs of our community. I mentioned COVID. One great response is it was the nursing students and faculty that were on the front lines at the local vaccination sites and the testing sites. If you look at the fire and EMS to try to provide safety measures for our community, those are Gateway grads. So I think it's our ability to be flexible and to maintain a presence in the community to adapt to changes.
Mm-hmm. You know, I asked you to name one thing that you were most proud of. Which one thing do you wish you might have done differently? And it doesn't mean how you did it was something that you felt that was wrong or whatever. But one thing that perhaps you might have done a little differently than how you did it as president.
Yeah, that's a great question. The easy answer would be I'm just so proud of everything we've done, but. Here's one bit of advice that I would give to anyone, the incoming president or anyone listening today, is that try to take time to provide a little reflection on what you've just experienced. We've had so many great experiences, and then we're on to the next one. So we open a new building, and we're on, what's the next building project, right? Or students graduate, and we're on to the next class. So that moment of reflection on what difference you can make as an individual, and how would you strengthen that experience for the next time you have the opportunity to do it? Because at Gateway, every day we have a chance to improve upon ourselves, and whether it's a classroom experience or a community experience. So for me, and I'll say it every day, it just the last 16 years are of just a blink, right? It went so quick, mm-hmm. and I don't know that I've been able to appreciate as much about my time here as I will now in retirement, I'm sure.
Sure. And, you know, as you talk about that, as you know, I'm a member of a local school board out in western Kenosha County, have been for 6 years and just got reelected.
Congratulations.
Thank you. But if you were sitting down with the person, she or he, who is going to be selected by the board of trustees to be the next president, what is one or two things you would say to that person with regards to working in a cooperative, ongoing, positive manner with the board?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first thing, and what really helped me when I came here was to understand and honor the past, right? The history of Gateway is so important. One of America's first two-year publicly funded schools, the legacy partnerships with our corporations, like I've suggested, the influence in the community, and the literally tens of thousands of graduates that are now providing support in our community in different ways. So I think that's a key asset to know the institution inside and out, right? Second thing would be to leverage the power of the people. We have some amazing faculty and staff that have experiences that I personally could never have had, right? I was never a firefighter. I was never a nurse. I was never a police officer. I was never a cybersecurity analyst. And so the people that have that experience can bring a whole new dimension to you, and it helps you think differently about the role that you can play in supporting a community. And then the last bit of advice I would say is that we're on this runway toward the future, and it's as big as we want to make it. So keep a strong vision for what Gateway could be, not what it is or what it was, but what it could be, and strive for that. A couple of key cornerstones that I know I'm very proud of, and our provost, Zena Haywood, as she's retiring as well, the advancement of the liberal arts degree pathways, that is a cornerstone of future success for Gateway Technical College. It'll put us in the same limelight of Miami-Dade mm-hmm. with the community college opportunity. Does not mean we will ever shy away from our occupational basis, but boy, what a pivot point in the history of Gateway to say we are here for any student that wants to transfer, take their knowledge and skills off to a university, and they can start right in their home community.
Mm-hmm. You talked earlier about your high school teacher, and also someone at UW Stout, but who has been one or two of your personal and or professional role models or mentors?
Yeah, I think probably everyone listening would know this for sure. Nick Pinchuk, the CEO at Snap-on Corporation, has taught me so much about influence and leadership in a community. I absolutely admire what he talks about, the sense of place, the sense of purpose. We're here for a reason, and how can we leverage the sense of place and purpose, which is to support the people that we represent and that we serve. So certainly one, Fisk Johnson, his commitment to philanthropy, probably our largest investor, and for the sole purpose of helping underserved populations. That is a major commitment that he continues to make, and we're honored at Gateway to be sort of the bear holder of that responsibility. So just really appreciate that. And then the last person I'd say out in Walworth County, Mike Reeder, who was my greatest adversary when I started, but has become one of my best friends because he's challenged me to be better. So we need it all. We need people that are going to give us influence around what we can provide in leadership. We need those that are willing to commit and honor the legacy through philanthropy. And we need those that are going to continue to inspire and challenge us to be better. When you have people like that in your community, and there are many more, you change as a person. And you have a sense of greater responsibility to uphold all those ideals. And I was just fortunate to have some outstanding role models in Southeast Wisconsin that has helped me position Gateway in a place where it's recognized throughout the state and throughout the nation as a model college.
Mm-hmm. We're sitting in what is now the Inspire building. Why was it called that? Or why is it called that? Yeah.
Well, if you follow Gateway, you know that we have some unique names of our buildings, starting with the Horizon Center, which was my first project. Mm-hmm. Horizon Center is the Automotive and Aviation Center, which is the land and the sky where they come together, creates the horizon. The philosophy there is that a student comes in thinking they want to be a pilot or an automotive technician, but when you reach that horizon, look out again, there'll be another horizon. Always strive to continue to improve. Same with the Hero Center in Burlington, health and emergency response occupations. Firefighters, EMTs, they're heroes in our community, and we should celebrate that. The Pike Creek Center, our horticulture center in Kenosha, because it's located next to the Pike Creek on campus, and mm-hmm. we made a commitment to sustainability and improving the water flow in that park. So it all makes sense. The Inspire Center came about because we want students to create that flame of knowledge and learning to continue to inspire us as citizens and themselves as professionals. And when we think about the role of healthcare, and I'll use nursing as the example, but it cuts across many healthcare professions, usually there's a reason why nurses are the most highly rated profession in all professions. They have a great deal of respect for nurses because they inspire us. They inspire us to be better, to care more for others, and I think it's just an appropriate fitting for a healthcare facility.
Mm-hmm. Another question is, how do you keep all the employees or team members with whom you work motivated to continue to do the great jobs that they already do?
Well, I would say it's easy, but it's not easy because it's a lot of day-to-day work. There's just a lot of different opportunities out there. But for the most part, in leadership, keeping people motivated means to be a good listener, to be present, and to participate in their vision for their work. So I spend a lot of time on the campus visiting with faculty, participating in the programs. I love to be a student in the classroom, meeting with students. So I think it's about the whole concept of giving of yourself to understand where the other team members are, whether it's through student services or whether it's through an academic program or even our leadership team here at the college. This year, I've asked our vice presidents to not focus on a goal for next year, but focus on a memory that I'll take with me that I'll never forget. So it's a different type of relationship that you establish with your team members in order to keep them engaged and inspired just as I am.
Mm-hmm. In the letter that you wrote to the overall Gateway community, you said, that leads me to my life lesson number two. Success in life is not determined by how hard your life's work is, but by how hard you work in life. Why did you write that, and what does that mean to you, Brian Albrecht?
Yeah. Well, I think it means, in any job, but I'll just reflect on my job, it's like a big poker game. You are all in, right? There is no, I'm going to work 80% today, or I think, you know, if we just wait long enough, this issue will go away. You got to work really hard at life, and no matter what job you're in, and I think if your commitment is to work hard, you will find that your life's work is ultimately the most rewarding experience you can have, and I think that's what any one of us would want to take into retirement, to be able to, you know, sit on the dock or something and go like, we put in a good show and as a good faith effort to do everything we could to be successful. So for me, it's just making sure that you're committed to the vision and ultimately doing everything you can to make it successful.
Mm-hmm. So as you look at the next 2 to 3 years, obviously, you will be in your current position from what I have read until the new president,
correct,
she or he, is appointed by the board. But what are some of the things that you are planning to do, you, Lisa, family, and just any aspect that you'd like to share?
Well, you probably can maybe even sense it through this radio interview. My smile gets bigger and bigger because we have two grandsons now. We've got little Brian and we have Logan, and I want to spend a lot of time with those two boys because I truly believe that those early impressions and the amount of time you spend with young people make a big difference in the way they grow up and perceive their life's dreams, right? And my goal as a grandfather now would be to make sure that they have every opportunity to succeed. And I'm so proud of our daughter, Alyssa, who lives in Kenosha with her husband, Anthony, raising their family there. So we will always have a touch point back here in Southeast Wisconsin. I'm going to stay on some of our local boards so I can stay connected to the community. I want to volunteer in our community if I can. Lisa is so good at that. She's a member of Team Rubicon doing disaster relief across the nation and working up in the northern part of the state doing some community volunteer activities. And then ultimately, after we take a little bit of break for reflection, I've learned a lot in the education space, and I want to try to stay active and provide some guidance for organizations that might need it, or at least tap into the networks that have been so successful in accumulating over the years to help the next president of Gateway or others take that to the next step, right? There's the biggest challenge in any new position is the person before you went so far, and then if they don't tell you the history or help you understand that networking capacity, you're always starting over. So I don't want anyone to have to worry about starting mm-hmm. over here.
But you know what? If that knock on the door came a year from now and someone said, Brian, we're interested in an interim, someone to serve in an interim position as a president or whatever, or for a foundation. We have a wonderful foundation here at Gateway. Any possibilities depending on what you're doing and how you're doing and the whole thing?
Well, I don't think anyone should ever turn away the possibility. I think it's tight labor markets give people opportunities that they didn't even dream of before, that's for sure. And education is a tight labor market right now as well. So I will do everything I can to leverage all that others have given to me, including, like I mentioned, my high school teachers, my college experience, and of course, the time that I spent at Gateway to help advance any organization that might need it. You know, I'm not willing to make a commitment long term anywhere
sure.
at this point, but you know, things change all the time in this space, and if we can find the right opportunity to move an institution or an organization, and I would say, with the same kind of commitment that we've had here at Gateway, that's what I would be looking for, because Gateway has really been an influential organization in Southeast Wisconsin.
You know, you started your letter, and I already referenced it. You said, if you would have asked me 38 years ago to describe how your career might end up, I would likely have said that you would be in a rewarding career as a teacher and coach. As a coach, and when you look at how well the Brewers are doing this year, I mean, everyone talks about
great.
The Bucks,
yeah.
and they had a great season, hockey. But as a coach, how did that, and how has that influenced you and everything that you have done in your career?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there are a lot of parallels to coaching and to teaching, because you're really taking the collective good of a group, right? So whether it's a class of 15 students with all different interests, backgrounds, experiences, and ultimately strengths, they're all good at different things, every individual. Just like a team, if you're on a baseball team, you know, every position has different characteristics and strengths. And some days people have really good days in the classroom and they really got onto a concept and they can lead the discussions. And just like in baseball, some days some people hit three hits and other days it's not so good. So it changes. So as a coach, you have to manage that process and I think find the best and get the best out of people by providing them the knowledge and experiences, and of course the practice in order to do that. So it goes back to working hard, to making sure that we're all clear on the same goal that we're trying to accomplish, and then allowing others to have some influence in that process, whether it's a leadership influence, a delivery of service influence, or whether it's, you know, I'm the best second baseman we have, so we're going to work really hard at perfecting the skills to make sure that it supports the shortstop or the first baseman. So I think there's a lot of parallels to that, but coaching in general is a huge position of influence. It's all about leadership because you're not actually on the field playing. I'm not in the classroom teaching. I need our faculty to be the best that they can be, so I have to provide the resources to make that happen, and I think that's the sign of a good coach.
Mm-hmm. And my last question is, I know on campus today here on the Kenosha campus, there were students from Bradford High School that they were here, and I think those who might be interested in our nursing program.
That's correct.
Did you have a chance to talk to them?
Yes. Isn't that exciting?
It is.
When I see young people come on campus for the first time and their eyes just get so bright going like, I could go to school here. This could be my lab. And they meet the faculty and these are my teachers. And many of them nowadays, Steve, have some dual credit experience. Mm-hmm. We serve over 5,000 high school students. So they have had classes from Gateway, but probably at their local high school. And now they get to come to campus for the first time. And they are, I'll say, quote, college students. Mm-hmm. And they get to feel what it's like to be a college student and think about their life's work going forward and say, I want to be a professional nurse. I want to be a professional auto technician. I want to be a manufacturing engineer. I want to be a cybersecurity analyst. And those experiences really empower a young person to make informed decisions about their career. And I think that's what we're all hoping for, that young people know what's available and that Gateway's here to help provide and support the educational pathways mm-hmm. for them.
Well, you know, I want to thank you for everything that you continue to do, that you have done,
you.
And your support certainly of WGTD Public Radio and everything here at Gateway. Brian Albrecht, thank you so much for being my guest this morning here on Education Matters.
Thank you, Steve.
In segment two, my interview is a rebroadcast with Louise Dubé, Executive Director of iCivics, which was founded back in 2009 by U.S. Supreme Court Justice Sandra Day O'Connor. iCivics is now the nation's leading provider of high-quality, nonpartisan, and engaging civic education resources. And now, Sandra Day O'Connor.
I want to thank you for spending your valuable time trying to find new ways to bring rich and engaging civics education to your students. When I stepped down and retired from the Supreme Court, I thought that one of the most important things I could do with my newfound free time, if there was to be some, was to help the next generation become knowledgeable in civics and civic principles and as leaders. And as you well know, the knowledge of our system of government is not handed down through the gene pool. It has to be learned by every generation of citizens. And our nation's schools were established initially for the purpose of educating our young people to be good citizens. And by bringing civic education to the classroom, you're carrying out that very important mission. And to help support you in that effort, I have teamed up with some experts in technology and in education, and together we've created iCivics.org, a website where you will find free lesson plans, interactive activities, social networking tools, and online games to excite and engage your students. You may be surprised that I'm promoting civics teaching and learning using online media. I'm not an expert in it. But these are the new tools of civic engagement for the digital generation, the young people. And even a retired cowgirl like me knows that we need to use these tools to educate if we're going to inspire and interest today's young people to become active and knowledgeable civic leaders. So I hope you'll try out the materials on the iCivics.org website. Tell us what you think and what more we can do to support you. As you know, democracy is not a spectator sport. We have to participate, each of us, to ensure that government of the people, by the people, and for the people shall not perish from this earth. I know you will not let that happen on your watch. Thank you.
And I'm very pleased to welcome Louise Dubé to Education Matters this morning. And Louise, welcome.
Well, thank you very much for hosting me, Stephen. It's a pleasure to be with you and the folks in Wisconsin. Wisconsin.
Just so our audience is aware, you have your law degree from McGill University in Montreal and also an MBA from Yale University. I know you started your position in July of 2014 as Executive Director of iCivics, and we heard Justice O'Connor give a bit of the background and the importance of civics education, but I thought maybe if we could just start with maybe talking and giving our listening audience a bit of background in terms of the overall focus of iCivics from your perspective as Executive Director.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for the opportunity to do that. It's iCivics was really only an idea in Justice O'Connor's head and became a reality. We started in 2009. And I think at the beginning, you know, it was just something that was deeply important to her, but it was primarily related to the independence of the judiciary. I think that's where the genesis of iCivics came from. She was on the court, and as she stepped down from the court, she retired, really felt like people didn't understand that if we elect judges, they may not be quite as independent as was originally structured in our system of government. And her solution to this was really to educate kids about our system, how it works, why you need to get involved, and what's in it for you. And as she went into this, she sort of devised this method, which you know now as educational gaming. And it's been tremendously successful. And so over the course of those years between 2009 and when I came in 2014, they gained a lot of teachers who became very excited about having access to free and quality civic education resources in a way that kids would actually want to do. So the whole premise for iCivics is let's put the students in the center of the action. Let's make sure that kids not only fill out a worksheet about what are the three branches of government, but let them become president of the United States for a time, try it out, try to see what it takes to be a president, see what kind of issues come to your desk, and then see if they can actually achieve their goals as president. Same thing with our game, Win the White House. Students run their own campaign for the presidency. They create their candidate, they create their platform, they have to defend their platforms with specific projects, they have to run a primary, they have to raise money, they have to put in appearances all over the country, and then over the course of many weeks, they either win the election or they don't. So that's what, when I came in 2014, there had been quite a bit of adoption, but really we hadn't told enough people about what iCivics was and why this was really very important. So that's what we tried to do. We tried to create a strategic plan and try to spread the word across multiple channels, either through media. We had an article in the New York Times, through conversations like this one, through letting teachers know all of the thousands of resources we have on the iCivics site so that they can make deeper and better use of it. And so we've been fairly successful. We've had over 20% increases in the traffic at iCivics year over year ever since then. And so we're really thrilled now. Last year we had about 4 million kids on iCivics. And this year is crazy. I mean, with the election, we have seen increases of 40% in some days, some weeks, as related to teachers and students looking for resources about the election. So I think we'll definitely be up more than 20% again this year.
Mm-hmm. One of the quotes from Justice O'Connor that's actually on your website, she says, "The practice of democracy is not passed down through the gene pool. It must be taught and learned anew by each generation of citizens." As you think about those words, and as I mentioned to you before we started taping, that I actually use iCivics in my graduate school law course at the University of Wisconsin Oshkosh. Why do you think there is a lack of civic education in this country?
Originally, I mean, this line is probably my favorite line, the one you selected, Steve, from Justice O'Connor. It really was the original mission of schools, right? I think most of us know that is why we created schools, and we wanted to teach kids how to be responsible and engaged citizens and knowledgeable citizens. And we've really gotten away from that. It's a confluence of factors that have led to this, and would take quite a while to untangle. But just to talk about a few of them, we've really seen a push, sort of an unintended consequence of this sort of education reform movement. We went back to the basics of ELA and math, and these are all fantastic disciplines, and everybody is supportive of that. But as a consequence, and the culture of accountability, district administrators started to take time away from other disciplines to focus on those that are tested, right? I think that's a normal response, and one which has been very difficult for social studies. And I think really to the detriment of a generation of kids. So that pressure has definitely been felt, but even worse, within the social studies environment, civics itself, with very weak mandates. Almost every state has mandates for civic education of one kind or another, but they're very weak mandates. They're not tested for the most part. They're either in middle school or in high school, not necessarily both, and they are usually not a full course. They're a part of a course. It's very easy to sort of follow them by the strict letter of the law, but not with the spirit that was intended. And so we've seen two separate issues here. One is that there's less civic education, and the second one is that there is a huge disparity in the quality of civic education that is directly related to income levels. Both of those are huge concerns for us. That's why we're committed to keeping iCivics free. But even with that, there is just quite a bit of out-of-school activities and civic-related activities that kids with more means get more of, and kids with fewer means get less of. So I think we've seen that trend over a number of years. I'm hoping that we're at the cusp of seeing it turn around. I think what's happening in the world right now is an indication of the interest in people coming back to what it means to be a citizen, what it means to be informed about politics and political issues, what it means to know how our institutions work, and also what it means to have a civil discourse. And I think all of those things are that have occurred have opened up people's eyes. And I will add one more thing. I think even beyond that, I think even corporations that are looking for able workers and who would have supported math and ELA as the core, the fundamental pieces of training kids, realize that in our next century, kids are going to have to solve very, very complicated problems. Problems that require judgment, requires working across with people that you may not agree with. These are all the kinds of things that a civic education will train you for. And that is why it's so very important not to stray from civic education in schools.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned before that you've seen an increase in the online usage, if you will, particularly during this presidential election cycle. And I think regardless of where someone sits or stands, whether they're a Democrat or a Republican or an independent, this has certainly been a most unusual election cycle. When you look at the dialogue that we see taking place around the country, what impact, if any, do you think this is having on our public or private school students right now in our country?
I think it's relatively complex, and we don't really know yet. What I can assure you of is that kids are very, very interested. They would like to have discussion. Circle did a survey on this. Circle, I refer to the group, the research arm at Tufts University. There's a lot of research into civic life, and particularly in terms of youth voting and civic education. They did a survey, and they really found that that teachers would love to do this and to teach, and that kids are very interested. But there's a lot of pushback right now because of the polarization to support teachers, and teachers are very afraid. I don't know exactly what it's like in Racine or Kenosha, but I do know that in some, particularly in purple states, some superintendents have specifically said to their teachers, do not teach the election, because parents will not back them up.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge problem. It's a huge problem for us, and we think it's simply not understanding how our democracy works. I think it's very important, because I think the kids are paying attention. I think they need to understand that there are institutions and that they work a certain way and that we have a historical basis. They need to learn the history of how these came about, and we need to let them talk.
Sure.
Let them take positions and have a discussion on controversial issues. And those are, you know, part of the six best practices in civic education. We need to support that. We need to stand up for, as educators, for that proposition. But if you're asking the long-term consequences of this, I hope that one of the long-term consequences will be that folks will understand how important civic education is, and that we'll see a movement go back the other way. I don't know if it will have an impact on kids in terms of voting. You know, there's a lot of short-term memories.
Mm-hmm.
But I do hope it will engage them in, you know, during the course of this election, there were many times where the rules of the election became actually, you know, very actively discussed. Those kinds of topics, if fostered by the teacher in the classroom, can really lead to long-term engagement with the process, right? They understand more, so they pay attention more long-term. That's our goal.
And finally, if any of our listeners, after listening to this interview and going on to your website at icivics.org, if they want to get involved, if they want to get engaged, how do they do this?
Well, thanks so much for that question. Yeah, so there are different levels of involvement. If you know, the first thing to do is to look at our games and hopefully assign them to your kids if you're teaching in the classroom right now. There are lots of opportunities for educators to get more involved with us. We are currently recruiting for our educator network group. The educator network is really a group of about 30 educators all over the country that get trained additionally. They get professional development. They get a lot of resources from us, and they also blog. They host webinars. They host visitors. They do a lot of things for us. We work together, and those are our most enthusiastic supporters, and we love our educator network. And then ultimately, you know, obviously we are entirely free, and so we raise every dollar every year. We're a small staff of 12 people, and all over the country, every 50 state. And so, you know, we have a donate page on icivics.org, and we will really appreciate your support.
Well, I want to thank you for taking your time and talking to us about iCivics, and I know that this has been started out as a dream of Justice O'Connor. Louise Dubé, thank you so much for all the work that you and your staff and all the members of your governing board, which of course includes Justice O'Connor, along with current Justice Sonia Sotomayor, and of course others who are on your governing board, for being my guest this morning on Education Matters.
Thank you so much, Steve. I really enjoyed the opportunity to talk with you and your guests.
I'd like to thank my guest this morning on Education Matters. In segment one, Dr. Brian Albrecht, president here at Gateway Technical College. And in segment two, a rebroadcast of an interview I did with Louise Dubé, executive director of iCivics. For WGTD and Education Matters, I'm your host, Steve Brown. Thank you so much for listening.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archived programs are available on our website, WGTD.org. You're invited to continue the discussion on the Education Matters Facebook page.
From the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, Kenosha's Boys and Girls Club now has online protocol for making automatic monthly donations. The club is a safe haven for kids to have fun, connect with mentors, and eat a healthy meal. Visit bgckenosha.org.
In a world filled with possibilities and wonder, we can always find grace in between the music. Join me, Lily Maselli, host of In Between the Music, and enjoy trivia and music together. For dates and times, visit WGTD.org.
From the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, Riverbend is extending its canoe and kayak rentals hour Tuesday evening, June 14th, so nature lovers can enjoy a summer nightfall on the river. To make a reservation, call 262-639-1515.
From the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, the spirit of Racine music makers, an ensemble of instrumentalists, handbell ringers, and singers will perform Sunday afternoon at 2 in the Coven Center. A free will offering will be collected during the performance on behalf of the United Nations Refugee Agency. This is WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that explores and highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Len Iaquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, Laura Sumner Kuhn, a former journalist with the Racine Journal-Times, who currently serves as an adjunct